It's 8:13 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Summit County Council meets tomorrow in work session starting at 1:15 at the County Courthouse in Colville. On the phone with a preview of the agenda is Summit County Community Development Director Pat Putt. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Leslie.
So first off, the proposed amendments to Chapter 2 of the Eastern Summit County Development Code. The council is scheduled to take a two-hour field trip with locations possibly including Colville, Whitesville, Wanship, and Peowa. Now, with the exception of Colville, these communities are all part of the unincorporated portions of the county. Are these proposed, and do these proposed amendments then take precedence over the municipalities? I mean, does Colville have to be a part of this?
No, no, but that's a really interesting question. In part of reviewing and analyzing this particular set of issues, and, you know, being developing structures on ridgelines and where best to, you know, place those and what criteria should we establish. One of the questions will be, you know, in some of these instances, these structures may be viewed from inside the municipality. And, you know, should we be taking into consideration the potential impacts on places like Colville? That's going to be one of the things that we want to talk about with council tomorrow on the field trip. Again, really what this is all about is where should we be concerned, from what vantage points should we be looking at when new buildings get built and there's the potential for those buildings extending above the ridgeline into the horizon line, to the skyline. This is a problem, or this is not a problem. This is an issue that affects both Snyderville Basin and Eastern Summit County, and our codes are a little bit different. And what we're trying to do is reconcile this problem on the east side. The Eastern Summit County Code outright prohibits a structure from extending into the skyline, meaning, you know, the building or the roof line has a backdrop of the sky, isn't blocked by any hillside or land behind it, when viewed from any state or county roadway, which is really, really a broad standard. What we're trying to do is come up with a better set of regulations and review criteria and an appropriate process to balance the need for making sure that structures are built appropriately, but doing so in a way that still allows for a property owner to utilize their property. Because in this situation, if we were starting from scratch, we have sufficient tools in the code to make sure that future development isn't approved in a way that houses, structures could be built to create this kind of a problem. But what we have now is just many, many existing platted, subdivided lots or legal lots of record that allow someone to build a home. Right now in Eastern Summit County, if there's a situation where someone has a lot or a parcel, and regardless of where they try to put it on the property, it extends above the ridgeline into the skyline, the only alternative that that property owner has is to go to the council through a special exception process, which is akin to a variance. That's proven to not be, you know, a very effective way of managing this. So the Planning Commission, Eastern Summit County Planning Commission, late last year, prior to the holidays, forwarded a recommendation to council. Council has had a work session on this potential, you know, amendment. We had a lot of discussion on that. The decision was made, let's go take a look in the field what this problem really looks like and show examples of some of these skylining issues.
Okay, and so is that what Chapter 2 deals with, and view sheds and ridgeline development? Okay, and this is just...
There's also a part of that about whether or not there can be some development, driveways, utilities that cross 30% slope areas. So this will take a look at that, too, and hopefully establish criteria for that.
All right. And do you have any, this is just one of how many chapters, though?
Well, this is one small segment of the overall rewrite of the Eastern Summit County Code. Why are we advancing this one? We're advancing this one simply because of the fact that we're running into this problem on an increasingly frequent basis. So we think we have some good solutions out there, and if we can get that done in advance of the broader discussion on some of the zoning and land use map issues, we think that's going to help a lot of property owners solve some problems.
Yeah, I was going to ask, though, do you have applications in that wouldn't even be, you know, affected by these changes?
Well, we actually have applications in the queue waiting for a decision to be made on this whole environmental ridgeline amendment to be made. So, again, hopefully we can get some direction coming out of this field trip on what the best strategy can be. Again, we have a recommendation from the Planning Commission. There's a couple variations on that we could advance. The goal is to get direction from the council tomorrow so that we can go back on the 25th and hopefully have a set of amendments adopted.
Yeah, so why would these applications, I mean, if they were filed before this has taken place, why would they be subject to following new rules?
Well, the problem is, Leslie, is if someone has brought in a set of building plans and that home skylines, we can't approve it. The only way we could approve it is to go through that special exception process, which is, you know, from an application fee perspective, relatively expensive and time-consuming. Rather than do these incrementally on a case-by-case basis, what we're trying to do is quickly come up with a solution that solves it for everybody, that is more predictable and a bit more streamlined.
All right. The council meeting in closed session following this road trip to discuss property acquisition, is it something you're going to be looking at on the field trip, open space?
No. The field trip is just going to be on this ridgeline and environmental lands question.
At 4:40, the council convening as the Board of Equalization, who makes the taxing decisions, and a few tax exemptions are being sought. The three asking for exemptions are Camp Oakley, which looks like it's a recreation environmental camp for religious and youth groups, and also PC Tots, a nonprofit daycare business. And then there's also a discussion and possible approval of primary and non-primary properties. One of them belongs to a Mr. Luber, I believe. His property is off of the Mirror Lake Highway. The issue, he says, is that it's just grazing land, but the county took it off of Greenbelt and now has assessed him rollback taxes. So why was that done?
I'm not exactly sure what the back history on this, but the whole process that's been set up is to allow people like this particular property owner or group of property owners to present their case why they shouldn't be assessed in the manner that they have been. It's sort of a safety valve to make sure that they have that opportunity in front of the council to explain the history of what and how they've been using their property. Yeah, my understanding is they're going to present an appeal of the tax rollback status, and they're appealing a late fee assessment. Council will have an opportunity to listen to that and weigh those facts, have an opportunity for the staff to present their side, and hopefully render a decision at the end of that discussion.
All right. At 6 o'clock, the annual routine where applicants appear for funding under the Community Development Block Grants. Mostly it's East County Utilities, but Scott Loomis asking for $50,000 for a study. Do we have a staff recommendation on that?
I think we're generally supportive of that. One of the highest priorities that council has moving into 2017 at just even county level and a county level working cooperatively with Park City Municipal Corporation is to begin to advance a real legitimate strategy for dealing with affordable housing. It's been a while since we've had a chance to go back in and measure where we are in terms of our housing stock, the target market that we're trying to hit with our employees and the need for affordable units. And I can't speak for council, but my guess is they're going to be very favorable when it comes to trying to help fund, because again, as a colleague of mine will frequently say, that which can't be measured can't be achieved, and we want to make sure we know, starting out early with this, that we have a current understanding of the state of affairs in terms of our housing stock. 2017 is going to involve what you're going to see is a considerable effort on the affordable housing front here, not only in Summit County, but I think cooperatively with the city as well.
All right. And then finally, I wanted to ask you about the $36 annual trash fee for 2016 was due January 4th. The county has heard from a number of unhappy residents, and I've heard of people just throwing the trash bill in the trash. So any idea how many complaints the county's recorded?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure the number. I believe that we've had a lot. We would hope that people wouldn't throw the trash bill into the trash. What we're going to be doing moving forward is to kind of re-examine how that was communicated. I think there's going to be more information heading into the future on how to help explain to the users and the public why the decision was made. Obviously, there was a gap between the decision to fund this garbage collection component and when it was implemented. Really, at the end, the property taxes that were dedicated to the solid waste collection program, council decided weren't adequate to meet our current needs and our future needs, and that included, I think, the landfill, the closing of our existing landfill, and an opening of a new one. And rather than increase a property tax, they believed it was better, was more prudent to set aside this $3 a month assessment. So, we're going to try and. Go ahead.
Well, what happened? I mean, we're paying a bill from 2016 and 2017. Did the Republic Services screw up here? They got some kind of concession, I recall, for taking this on.
I would be reckless to assess blame on this. I think where we're going to be moving forward from is we're going to step back and we're going to re-explain this. Are a number of the members of the public upset? Absolutely. And it's understandable. We appreciate the fact that, you know, people get angry when either expectations aren't met or they're surprised. And so I think we're going to go back and try to re-explain that here in the upcoming weeks.
Yeah. Are there any exceptions allowed? I mean, perhaps for some of our seniors? I mean, we know that they don't generate a lot of trash.
That's a good question. I don't know, but allow us to go back and answer that question. Again, what we're trying not to do is just kind of kick this can down the road. Questions just like that are the important ones, and I think what you're going to be seeing coming out of the courthouse here in the next couple of weeks are direct responses to that, again, people will have a chance to respond to.
All right. And then in the meantime, if you don't pay, what is interest accruing?
I do not know that. And I appreciate you understand that one's probably a little bit outside my wheelhouse. If people do have questions such as that, I would encourage them to call the courthouse, and we will do everything we can to make sure those questions are answered.
All right. Pat, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
That's Summit County Community. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, the Park City Planning Commission takes up the Treasure Project again tomorrow night. In the studio with details, I have Planning Commissioner Bruce Erickson. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's see. That's going to first item on the regular agenda. Planning Commission scheduled to look at the conditional use permit criteria 2, 4, 5, 6, and 13. So that's a lot to look at. Will you get through a third of the entire criteria in a single night?
No. This is just the beginning of this conversation, but once again, these criteria are all interlinked with traffic, transportation, parking, circulation, pedestrian circulation. So they're all kind of interwoven. They don't separate out very well. I expect traffic, discussion to go a couple, two, three meetings while the Planning Commission sorts through all the facts and gets the facts straight in their brains so we can get ready to do deliberations.
And I think, as I recall, this may be the first time that we're getting to this issue of traffic, yeah?
The public has had conversations on it. This is the first time this Planning Commission will see that.
All right. So do we have traffic studies to look at for this?
We have a number of traffic studies. We have city analyses, peer review of the submitted staff reports back from 2009, traffic work all the way back to 1985, 86. If you get a chance to look, if the public gets a chance to go to the Treasurer website at parkcity.org, they will see probably 15 different traffic reports. Francisco Astorga, Alfred Knotts, and Matt Castle have done a really nice job of synthesizing all the information. Planning Commission probably won't make many comments this evening, but they're going to be reviewing what we call the 2009 report.
Still, things have changed so much since 2009, even in like the last 4 years where we've really seen traffic become an issue.
Well, yes and no. I think as you go back through the reports, you'll see that a lot of the things that are happening today were predicted in the early 2009-2010 period. So in terms of the reports, the efficacy or the accuracy of those reports is what we're looking at. Did they accurately predict the changes from the resorts? Did they accurately predict the changes from Treasure? How are these things all interrelated with the externalities? For example, the large projects in Summit County, they may not have been counted thoroughly in 2009 because nobody knew they were there.
Yeah. So for this application, I mean, what traffic do you look at? Everything coming in and out of the project?
So there's two components of the traffic. One is the traffic that the project will actually generate. And then it will be the service vehicles and construction vehicles the project will actually generate. And then you add that into all of the traffic projections that happen at Empire Avenue and Deer Valley Drive, Park Avenue, Lowell and Empire, 248 and 224.
Yeah, so are you able to discern the traffic that is going to Treasure as opposed to Marriott Mountainside or the ski resort?
You can predict those things, and I'm not going to claim to be the expert on this one. This one's certainly Alfred Knotts and Matt Castle's expertise. But yes, we can predict based on the Professional Traffic Engineers Association number of trip generations. Where the trip generation calculations are weak is the effect of shuttle traffic, the effect of the cabriolet potentially, how many people go to Main Street. And it's really sketchy when you start to talk about how employees will get to the site and not get to the site, or whether the employees are working two jobs, so they're all night long at the Marriott and then they come to a day job at the Treasure. And all those things are subjective.
Criteria 4 looks at emergency vehicle access. So what are the issues here?
A couple things. The project in 2009 was reviewed by the fire district and our fire marshal for the ability to move fire apparatus inside the project. So part of the reason for the high ceilings in the parking garage is to allow the apparatus to go inside the project and move around without surface roads. Access to the site with emergency vehicles. So, for example, if you were driving a large piece of equipment up Lowell Avenue and the parking is there and people are walking on the sidewalk, is that really going to work? We're going to be thinking about all those things, asking the Planning Commission to look at it.
Yeah, and I know it was an issue with the Grand Summit at Canyons Village and Marriott Mountainside. I mean, in terms of whether or not we even have the fire apparatus to get to the tallest floors of these buildings. So
right, but there are mechanisms that the fire district can use and the International Building Code can use for these things, including fire caches and on-site equipment, fire sprinklers, all of those things.
Yeah. And certainly during any busy ski day, I mean, we see bumper-to-bumper traffic in which an emergency vehicle couldn't get by. So, I mean, why would we look at that for this project?
We look at that for all the projects, and I think that that's a decision the Planning Commission is going to have to determine whether the project can be adequately served. Right now, that's up to the fire district and our fire marshal, and they'll give the report to the Planning Commission.
Criteria 5 looks at the location and amount of off-street parking. So is the applicant asking for some off-street parking?
No, they're not.
All right. Does it required?
No, they should have all their parking inside their parking garages. The open question on that one is they're making a big big consideration for employee shuttles and employees to use the cabriolet, and we don't know exactly how that's going to influence the bus system or the downtown parking structures.
And the cabriolet is based where?
Cabriolet would be coming out of the town lift current Sweeney base and going up to where the old unload station was up on the Creole ski run. So it's not very long. It's probably shorter than the one that's at the canyons.
All right. And then criteria six, dealing with the internal vehicle and pedestrian circulation system. You like what you see here?
Well, I don't know what the Planning Commission is going to think about that. We haven't really drilled down on that one yet. It's pretty standard kind of mall resort condominium type configuration, so I don't particularly see any issues there. We are a little bit nervous about keeping people on site. The current proposal is asking for commercial areas, as you know earlier, and whether or not that's going to attract business from outside the area or whether these are going to be support commercial to inside the project.
All right. And then finally, criteria 13 looks at the control of the delivery and service vehicles, as you kind of mentioned, the loading and the unloading zones, the screening of trash pickup areas. What are the issues for you here?
Well, the main one is it's kind of fun to look at in the staff report. The applicant has turned in some diagrams about the turning radius of large trucks and how they go around the intersections and how they affect the way the intersections work. And that's always a fun exercise in the middle of the night to work on. So Planning Commission will be reviewing that information, seeing if the streets work, and then Matt Castle, the city engineer, will give his determination whether we can actually get a Cisco truck up to that site. Can the Cisco truck or the Nicholas truck, like outside here, actually see into the parking garage so that they're not holding up traffic? So we want to make sure that those intersections all work.
All right. And, you know, and I just heard this recently, Bruce, and I guess I was surprised by it, that we have no development agreement for Treasure. What are we basing this all on? Some approved master plan?
That's correct. That's correct. So in 1985, the Planning Commission made a determination. The City Council overturned that decision and gave an approval to Treasure subject to the approval of a conditional use permit. So the 1985 is, in effect, valid according to the City Attorney's Office, the peer review from Jody Burnett, the Planning Commission's attorney, that is a valid document. It's currently in effect. And that's how the other portions of the Sweeney project were moved forward. So while there's no development agreement per se, that will come out of these conditional use permit if, in fact, the Planning Commission determines to move it forward.
Yeah, we don't do that. We don't do business that way anymore, though.
No, we don't. In fact, a development agreement needs to be in place within 6 months of an action by the Planning Commission.
All right. And the reason, I mean, did Treasure precipitate then?
No. You know, the original one that went through that was the development agreement for Deer Valley Resort, and that's been amended 11 or 12 times now. There's a development agreement at base of Park City Mountain Resort. There's a development agreement for Empire Pass, one for St. Regis, Deer Crest, a couple of smaller ones. So it's been around since probably the early 2000s.
All right. Elsewhere on the agenda, a couple of items there I wanted to get to. There's a zone change proposed from residential medium density to historic residential low density in recreation open space, talking about the three BLM-owned historic homes and lots there on the south side of Deer Valley Drive headed up to the resort. So at one point, this area, I believe, was being looked at as a possible site for affordable housing. This action would prevent that, right?
Yep, that's correct. Well, not necessarily. To be clear, it's about 4 acres of BLM lands. The Dennis family is working on a color of title action with the BLM to take title to those houses and a certain portion of land there. What this action will do is take about 3 acres plus minus of the BLM ground and rezone it open space. And then the remaining slightly less than 1 acre, the Dennises would get when their color of title action. We started out trying to do residential development on that one. That did not achieve enough density to achieve one of our goals, which is the restoration of those three houses. So the HRL designation would give the Dennis family enough density, if you will, to redo those houses and recover some of their costs. That does not preclude affordable housing in that location. The houses would have to be restored, just like at 1450 and 1460 Park Ave.
Yeah, but we could still see, like we have seen, maybe like up on Ontario, a 600-square-foot home going to a 3,600-square-foot home.
Yeah, there's not much we can do about that. The HRL designation requires historic district design review, and the RD district does not. Any additions to those historic houses have to meet the guidelines, and they can't overwhelm the historic home. The property down there just doesn't lend itself to big houses. I mean, it's going to be small no matter what.
Yeah. So, and then the open space would be where?
Everything up from Deer Valley Loop and Rossi Hill Drive all the way up to where the open space almost connects with American Flag Subdivision open space. So it's a big triangle piece. As you look uphill between Coalition View Court and some of the stuff on Rossi Hill Drive.
So the city's decided to do it this way. How come?
Well, we heard the neighborhood, and they wanted to protect this ground if and when the BLM transfers it to private ownership. And right now it's zoned E estate, which would allow it to be developed if the property was big enough. City said, well, okay, we think this is a good idea. Let's rezone it open space. But make sure the Dennises have an opportunity on the lands that they're working with the BLM on to restore the houses and get some additional density.
All right, so we've got a possible decision on that coming up next month then.
Yeah, we would like to see that decision move to the city council.
All right, and then 1846 Prospector. This is a conditional use permit application to build 6 residential units on 2 new floors above an existing 1-story commercial building. What building are we talking about?
I believe it's Skis on the Run. It's one of the 2 ski delivery operations in Prospector. I think we may see more of this where redevelopment is occurring on the 2nd and 3rd floors. Prospector was designed in the 1970s to be able to have multiple use kind of uses like this, and this very well could meet the criteria of the original Prospector approval. I think there's some issues of parking. There's some issues about garbage and recycle removal that's kind of across Prospector, and we're working really hard with the Prospector Owners Association to get that solved.
Yeah, so are we talking about any kind of underground parking here anywhere?
Not on this particular project. There is some underground parking over next to the Gold Dust building. Not sure it's working really well because of some design issues about the top deck and what can go on there and whatnot. Marriott has a bunch of underground parking underneath it, and that seems to work fairly well.
Yeah, but the parking lots out there that we kind of know, I mean, are all really building lots, aren't they?
No, the parking lots are specifically designated for parking, and I believe they're called parking lots A through K in the land management code, and says you don't get to do anything other than parking. And then they went through and did a floor area ratio of the build-out of Prospector when they originally did it, and that's how the parking was allocated. Where we're running into issues with the Prospector Owners Association is the change of use to where all these delivery and service vehicles are being stored in those spaces. And so as we move forward with this really, really nice redevelopment that Prospector is bringing forward, we're working through every one of those parking issues to get those solved and kind of clean up the dumpster issue out there. So the Owners Association is really active. They're going to go ahead and take some action on their own, spend some money on the walking plaza, and I really look forward to this redevelopment.
All right. Anything else you want to mention?
No, thank you. It's another record-setting meeting, so have a look at the websites, and we're happy to talk.
All right. Bruce Erickson is Park City Planning Director. KPCW News Time now, 8:44. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. For the first free Lunch and Learn of 2017, the PC Mark will discuss taking control of your health. In the studio with me, I have Mark Wellness Coordinator Cole Johnson, along with Health Advocate Kent Maurer. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you doing?
Great. Cole, so you can start with the details, when and where?
Yeah, I'm here to invite the community to our free lunchtime learning tomorrow from 12 to 1 p.m. at the PC Mark, and to introduce our guest speaker, Kent Maurer.
Okay, Kent, so tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've been in Park City for a little over 10 years, but I've been in the fitness industry for 35 years, and I've been the fitness directors at spas and health clubs, and I've had my own personal training studio, which I have now in Park City. So as a trainer, you know, you get close to your clients, and all you want to do is see them healthy, and all the exercise in the world doesn't always make you healthy. So I've discovered the power of a plant-only diet, and that's why I've gotten so passionate about it, because it is very powerful.
Well, I think it was your wife who told me that the way you look is 80% of what you put in your mouth.
It really is. And it's a domino effect, because what we're choosing to eat is also affecting everything around us, from our water shortages to our food shortages to everything we see on this planet. So it's a big deal.
Yeah. So you're going to talk about the reasons why somebody should look at, or at least eating less meat, I guess, if not going totally vegetarian.
Exactly. Yeah, my presentation tomorrow is going to be mostly about human health and showing people how simple it is to change their diet from a meat-based diet to a plant-based diet, and how filling and satisfying and delicious it is. And, you know, I'm one of those guys that grew up a meat eater like everybody else. I didn't stop eating it because I didn't like the way it tastes. I love my meat and my cheeses, but I found out how much better I felt and how much better it was for not only for me but for my clients. And then the more you dig into it, the more you see how much it's better for the planet by advocating more of a plant-based diet.
And I ate meat. I went without meat for several years in my younger age. But what I remember about it is how time-consuming it was. I mean, there's a lot of preparation involved.
When I first started, it was hard for me too, you know. But this day and age, it's amazing what's out there. I mean, there's so many meat-based, you know, plant-based alternatives to meat that are just delicious. I eat pretty simply. I like to base my meals around beans and potatoes and whole grains, and then complement it with fruits and vegetables. So, and if you talk to my wife, which as obviously you know her, she keeps it simple for our meals too. So she's got it easy for me. I don't need a fancy meal.
Yeah. Well, and I think that you certainly go to the traditional stuff, but you say there's a lot of stuff out there, you know, these soy-based products, but that stuff is so processed. Why would you want to eat something like that?
Actually, a lot of the newer meats are not soy-based. They're more like pea-based protein, like the new Beyond Burger from Beyond Meat, which is all pea-based. But when you talk about processing, and when you look at a veggie burger or a piece of cheese, basically you're looking at a grain or a bean burger with some spices and herbs in it. But when you look at the processing that goes on to bring an animal to your table, it's even more heavily processed than a piece of, you know, than a grain or a bean. So I have to kind of disagree with people when they talk about how processed some of these plant-based burgers are, these plant-based meals are, because nothing's more processed than an animal.
Right. And so is that something you would recommend then, looking for these pea or grain-based products as opposed to soy, given what we know about soy products today?
Well, soy products, if you are going to do soy, I always encourage people to buy organic, because that's where the GMOs come from. Is from most of the soy produced in this country is GMO-based. So if you buy it organic, you're not going to have GMO-based soy. But the Asians have been eating soy forever, and they have some of the lowest incidence of heart disease and cancer on the planet. So soy is not a bad food. It's an excellent food. It's just right now, the way it's raised in our country, it's mainly fed to animals. So if you're worried about soy and you're worried about cholesterol, you're getting both from animal flesh than you would if you just ate food directly from the earth. So I advocate real food, you know, food that comes as close from the earth as possible and the less processed as possible. But if you're looking for a nice transitional food, something that tastes like a piece of bacon you're used to, they have amazing plant-based bacons now, burgers, cheeses, they're incredible. They didn't have that back when I started doing this 20 years ago. So I've been eating like this for 20 years.
Wow. And let's talk a little bit about that, because I'm sure you hear it all of the time. You know, how am I going to build lean muscle, you know, with, you know, broccoli?
Well, you know, fortunately, I don't live on broccoli. I base my food around more filling foods. Like I said, beans and protein, you know, beans for protein. Potatoes have protein. Grains have protein. And as I tell people, I'm a trainer. As I tell people, muscle doesn't come from how much steak you eat. I mean, look around our country. We have a lot of steak eaters that are not that healthy looking or muscular people. Muscle comes from hard work. So, you know, what a plant-based diet allows you to do is work harder because you have quicker recovery, more energy, and you can work harder to build that muscle that you want. So muscle comes just from hard work, not from how much hamburgers you eat.
Yeah, and I always like the example of, well, take a look at the gorilla or the cow, right?
Exactly. Right. Well, our closest ancestors are all, you know, apes, and they don't eat, their, you know, primary food is plants.
Yeah. So what are you going to do tomorrow? Are you going to have some recipes, or are you just really going to make a presentation about, you know, why people should think about eating less meat?
I'll have everything people need to know to eat this way. Recipes on my website I have over thousands, and I have just really simple way to help transition into this way of eating. And I'm just really going to encourage people to hear this information, because a lot of people, it's new, and we're all raised eating meat, and it's foreign for us to think that we wouldn't eat any meat. But once they, if they ever give it a chance, because I do like 15-day, 25-day challenges where people just try for the first time in their life not having any animal products in their belly, it's amazing how people feel. They lose weight automatically. They lower their cholesterol every time, and their energy picks up. So, and they realize, wait, I don't need that for substance. I can have this instead, and I feel better, and it's better for the planet.
Okay, sounds like an interesting conversation. Again, Kent Maurer, and Take Control of Your Health tomorrow at the PC Mark, starting at 12 noon. Thanks for your time, you guys.
Thanks for having us.
8:51 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, coming up on Thursday, the Park City Film Series and the Park City Education Foundation present the free screening of the documentary Underwater Dreams. Katie Wang from the Film Series and Director of the Education Foundation, Abby McNulty in the studio with me. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Katie, we'll start with you. When and where?
So it's going to be this Thursday night, 6:30 p.m. It's a free screening, part of our Real Community Series. And we're just really excited to be partnering with the Park City Education Foundation again. This is, we've collaborated many times over the previous years. But last year, around the same time, we did a film called Code about women in coding. And this year, to bring Underwater Dreams, which is a story about a group of students from Arizona who just decided on their own, a Latino student said, hey, you know, we are in a robotics club. We want to enter into this underwater robotics competition in California. And so they go, they're going to be up against MIT, Stanford, I mean, powerhouses in engineering and robotics. You know, and these are high school students. So they get their Home Depot robot out there. They have some problems. So they end up using some feminine products to plug a leak in their underwater robot, and they win. I mean, it's this amazing story of them just kind of putting it out there of like, hey, let's see what we can do. And what's great about this story is not only how robotics kind of changed their own life trajectories, but how it really changed their entire community. When they went back, and you see this a lot of, you know, throughout the film, you have the other students saying, I've always wanted to be a doctor. Like, why not? Like, why not just put it out there? And, you know, I'm going to try and solve the energy crisis. Like, sure, I can do that. Look what these guys did. And it's just amazing how when you have success within your own community, particularly in an underserved community like these students came from, how that really just empowers everyone else to just, you know, follow their passion and really put the extra resources into it. So it's this great story of robotics and connects to kind of what's going on in our community, which Abby will talk about with coding and, you know, how that is, you know, more than just about learning to code. And then just, you know, empowering communities, particularly our Latino community, and drawing attention to, you know, these really powerful stories of success.
Mm-hmm. So who finds the film? You knew about it, Abby, or you found it? You guys, it's like, oh, this would make a good collaboration?
We heard it on NPR.
Yes. About 2 years ago, it was like a driveway moment for me where I sat outside Park City Market listening to the interview on NPR, and it was an amazing story. And so for 2 years, Katie and I have been bouncing ideas back and forth. How can we bring this to Park City?
Okay. So why is the Ed Foundation involved with this film in particular?
So the Ed Foundation loves to partner with the film series because it's a great way to host conversations about education and different areas of education. And this one in particular is exciting because it's really about what it means to provide opportunities to children and what they can do with that. And we have a really quite robust robotics program here in Park City. It's led outside of school. Sherry Pruka is the coordinator of the robotics program, and she'll be the panel moderator tonight. And we also just started this coding program, and the entire goal of the coding program is to bring more girls and minorities into a non-traditional field, computer science, and to teach them skills that will stay with them for the rest of their lives, whether it be the actual skill of coding, which is an employable skill, or whether it be the problem solving, the act of logical thinking. So we'll use this program to talk about all the different kinds of opportunities in the Park City School District, coding being one of them, and robotics. And it's just, I think, a great platform to talk about education.
All right. And who else do you have on the panel following?
So Cheryl Pruka is going to be the moderator. Then we have Mike Burton, who is the coding teacher.
He's a coding teacher at Trailside. So this year we have coding teachers at all four elementary schools, and he's one of them.
Sunny Washington, who's the CEO of Argisat.
And she started Argisat. We have Argisat. It was a grant that the Education Foundation funded at Ecker Hill this year. And it allows 6th and 7th and 8th graders as well to learn to code, manipulating devices that will do experiments in space. Super cool. Sunny Washington, Argisat is a Wasatch-based company, and she started it to bring more diversity into computer science to get more girls interested.
And then we'll have two students. We have Kirsten Keblish, who's in the robotics program, and then Rebecca Gonzalez, who is now in university, but she came up through the Park City school system and is now the head of PC Bright Futures. So is a Latina, first-generation college soon-to-be graduate, so leading some exciting programs there. So to bring in, again, that component of looking particularly at our minority community, Latino community in particular, and what's going on in our community and the successes that we've had there.
All right. So is the robotics program on its own, or is it part of the CAPS program?
It does actually stand on its own. Mm-hmm. It has a nice collaboration with PC CAPS. But
great. Mm-hmm. Great. And then who would enjoy this film? I mean, what age groups?
You know, I think it would appeal to all ages. The story is just so empowering. You know, it's not rated, of course, like a lot of our films. But I think that anyone could relate to this story of just triumph and success. Certainly if you're a parent, I think it's interesting to just see how, you know, when you spark the imagination of a child, just how powerful that can be. But I think it would, you know, at any age, at any level, any place you are, I think it's always good to see these stories of empowerment and just, you know, where they've gotten to in life, these students. So it's at 6:30. It's on Thursday. It is a free screening, and it will be followed, as we said, by a panel discussion. So connecting what's going on in the film to what's, you know, the exciting things that are going in our community, and hopefully providing role models for some of the students that do come. And we do hope we get a lot of students out there so that they can kind of touch and talk to, people that aren't just on the screen, but in our own community, because we have some great folks here, too, as well.
Okay. Katie and Abby, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.